Welcome to Talking About Organizations, a podcast on organization and management studies graciously supported by our listeners. This is a supplement to episode 85, where we explore the classic book Organizations by James March and Herbert Simon, published in 1958, and second edition released in 1993. It is the sixth episode in our Carnegie Mellon series, highlighting classic texts from the Carnegie Institute of Technology's Graduate School of Industrial Administration in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Participating in the episode are Catherine, Greta, Leonardo, and Tom. The Carnegie Mellon series began all the way back in our episode number 4, where we covered A Behavioral Theory of the Firm by Richard Syrett and James March, along with a couple of chapters of March and Simon's Organizations. Together, these provided a foundation for rethinking about the meanings of organization and organizing, particularly the introduction of terms such as bounded rationality and satisficing. We continued offering episodes from this school, as we found so many of their works constituting classics in their own right. But we recognized that organizations was simply too important and just too big to leave to a couple of terms covered in part of one episode. It needed its own space, its own opportunity to be examined, and the full book needed to be covered. In its time, in the late 1950s, organizations represented a clarion call for research under a whole new paradigm of thinking about organizations. Part of the slow move away from the scientific management, with its closed system approaches to the workplace, and its instrumental approach to people. March and Simon proposed more than just an alternative view, but also presented a massive conceptual framework with over 200 variables drawn from existing literature at the time and their own extensive observations. They then established a set of axioms and propositions to propose how these variables all related to one another. This was intended to spur further research, particularly quantitative research. The book spans 7 chapters, and the first 2 focus on this alternative view of organizations, contrasting it with notions of so-called classic organization theory, such as scientific management. The human member is but an instrument in this theory, employed to perform certain tasks to which one measures an individual's capacity to perform the task, and the rate or speed of performance. The reduction of costs, either time or money, become the central aim of changing and improving the organization. The organization's design is understood as an assignment problem, one of ensuring a clear division of labor and appropriate coordinating mechanisms among the subunits. But the essential problem March and Simon express is that classic organization theory simply does not manifest in practice. People do not behave as machines, and scientific management simply does not capture the many ways that behaviors, motivations, and so on cause an organization's performance to deviate from what the theory suggests. Because Chapter 6 is the source of the enduring concepts from which the book is known, we focused more attention on the other chapters. At the heart of this alternative theory is the concept of motivation. Chapter 3 looked at motivation and how it influences decisions by members to produce, while Chapter 4 looked at motivation and how people choose to participate in the organization. Drawing from the works of Merton, Guldner, and Selznick, March and Simon examined the role of member satisfaction and how it may influence a member to perform well or not so well, search for alternatives, and potentially leave the organization. Variables such as the ability to participate in decisions, task complexity, rewards, incentives, and so many others are identified and related to one another to explain this much richer and more complex look at organizational behavior. Chapter 5 was about conflict, and a primary takeaway from the episode is how prior to 1958, conflict was just simply seen as a barrier or constraint to be reduced and eliminated. In the book Organizations, conflict is instead seen as inevitable and unavoidable due to the natural emergence of individual interests and motivations. There are never simple solutions, and managers have to embrace complexity in all of its messiness. And Chapter 7 covers planning and innovation. What drives an organization to change? How and when does innovation occur? Where does it occur? Does innovation differ when it is driven or managed from the top versus from the rank and file? How does planning work? Amidst the natural tensions between centralizing the effort for control and efficiency versus decentralizing for flexibility. In addition to finishing our discussion of the book itself in Part 2, we will examine its broader purpose and relevance to today. From an academic standpoint, its impact is immeasurable. Some of the individual propositions turned into whole subfields of organization theory, but it was not clear that the book was necessarily destined for this, given its grounding in traditional quantitative methods. We argue that advances in qualitative methods, such as case study approaches, allows researchers to investigate relationships that in the 1950s were deemed impossible or extremely difficult to investigate. Another facet is what the book could be used for beyond furthering research. A question is raised about the extent to which the book represents how organizations should behave or as a basis for guiding managers. We turn our focus on Herbert Simon's extensive contributions to the field of artificial intelligence and how the book's multitude of propositions represent a roadmap for consultants to diagnose problems in an organization. In other words, to use the many interconnected figures in the book as a tool to inquire on various trouble spots and work backwards to a range of possible causes. A final point is about the second edition, in which March and Simon critique themselves in the book's new introduction. It is worth noting on page 5 of the second edition the four broad themes from which they would have written the book differently, such as giving more attention to empirical observation as opposed to theoretical speculation, or less emphasis on analytically rational as opposed to rule-based action. This serves as a reminder to us about classic texts, that the title of classic means that a work is important and continues to have something to say, but that it does not mean that it is perfect. And that's all for now. We invite you to listen to the full episode, available in two parts on our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com or through your favorite podcast streaming service. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group of Organization Studies for their generous support and the support of our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening and have a great day.